guys. Thanks for tuning in. We are here in the studio right now. It is the Off Track Show. The final World Cup downhill has just happened. We're here in the studio. Myself, Tristan Merrick, as your host. We've got Seb Kemp. He's back in here. We've managed to get him away from Vegas and in front of the camera. Seb, how are you doing?
Not bad. How are you doing, Tristan?
Yeah, good, man. You know, it seems like fall is in the air. We've got a bit of snow that we're dealing with here in Whistler right now up at the top of the mountain. So it's hard to believe that six rounds have come and gone. And I mean, we're at, I think, 12 or 13 podcasts now. So it's summer seems to have flown by.
Yeah, it took a while for the season to get started, didn't it? It wasn't until June that it kicked off. And then all of a sudden, we're at the end and it's all over.
Yeah, six races in 4 months just doesn't, seems anticlimactic. Doesn't.
I'm sure for someone else, though, it feels like a lot longer season. Our other guests we have in today, though.
Yes, exactly. And joining us from the powers of the internet here on the courtesy of bikemag.com, we've got Sven Martin. Sven, you're a little under the weather right before Trans-Provence there. How are you doing? Are you happy that the end of it has come and gone?
Yeah, never really happy. Happy that the late nights editing and lack of sleep and long days are over for some time. But yeah, like you said, it's going to be a bit of a but anticlimactic as always when the season winds down. And now I'm just pretty much body's run down and it knows it's over, so my body shut down too when it needs to be getting ready for Trans-Provence. But but definitely couldn't have ended in a more exciting manner for pretty much all the categories. So it was a good ending for the season for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was quite the race. I know last time we had you on the show, it was kind of, we chatted about how amazing it would be if there was, you know, a couple more rounds. Obviously we're counting points beforehand and mathematically everything kind of lined up where, yeah, it was, nobody was in the driver's seat, as you said best, last week. And that's what happened coming into the finals there. So, Seb, what was your take on everything? You being here in Whistler, seeing all the Canadian mountain bikers go absolutely apeshit.
Well, do you know, I didn't. Of course, we knew, like, the whole world in our world wanted old Stevie Smith to win. But do you know, it didn't actually strike me until this morning. I woke up and I thought, there's a Canadian World Cup champion.
It's never been. It's new to us.
It's not even new. It's frankly bizarre. Like, you couldn't really have imagined that a few years ago, could you?
No, as being a Canadian, no. I mean, considering it's cool to see some younger guys that are getting up there now, like Kyle Sanger's getting 20th. But yeah, as for me as a Canadian, I can't even, you know, comprehend that. I mean, I know years ago people were like, how come Canada has the best bike trails in the world, the best like training ground, yet we have no cyclists, you know, at the top of the World Cup game. You know, Stevie was on the rise, but pretty crazy. Just even at the start of the year, if you told me that he'd be have the number one plate at the end of the year, I probably would have maybe questioned that. You know, not to take anything away from Stevie, but it was very surprising to see how it unfolded.
Yeah, he did it well.
Yeah, I won't be claiming that I predicted him for the win because I didn't, but I definitely I interviewed him last year. This time last year, pretty much summing up his season, and I pegged him as the one that Gwyn, Greg, and G would have to watch out for because he's found his consistency. He was the only other one, like the previous three, that looked like he could no longer just be a threat for the podium, which it was kind of last year and the year before. But I had sort of predicted then that he would also be a threat for the overall for the other big three riders. And and then he's just slowly worked his way right up to that point right now.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And he won his first World Cup a year ago in Norway.
Well, he's won four of the last seven races.
Yeah, that takes him eighth in all time with downhill World Cup victories, one behind Fabien Barel.
Yeah.
Already in 1 year. That's pretty good.
Yeah, very, you know, cool. Cool to see considering, you know, Seb, you and I have lived in Whistler for a long time, and we've seen Stevie from this, you know, gap tooth young little kid riding a Cove bike under the tutelage of the Nugget, Gabe Fox there. And just seeing him grow as a rider, develop as a rider, you know, he went from Cove to Evil and then onto this Da Vinci, and awesome to see him there and at the pinnacle of the sport. And it's, I would say right now he's at a young age where there's quite a few years ahead of him where everybody else is going to have their hands full with him.
I think it has to be said, though, that I think if a wet rag that was Canadian had won the World Cup, all the Canadians would still be cheering just as loud.
I know I was yelling at my TV at the crack of dawn. I know the neighbors are like, something going on over there later in the day? And I was like, oh, no, just some weird, abstract sport. It's not hockey was happening, so.
But we have to talk about momentum, really. Stevie, first victory a year ago, but then this year, he just started rattling out wins. Once he got on to that, into that momentum, he got in the groove, and he just not ran away with it, but he started running with the ball.
Three wins in a row. So, I mean, Sven, you're there at each and every one of these races. I mean, and you're chatting to the guys each and every week, and I know there's a lot of interviews with other riders, and I couldn't help but pick up everybody else in the pits was pretty much saying Stevie's the guy that's going to win this. Like, he's got the confidence. Unless he crashes, Greg was saying, unless he crashes, it's Stevie's race.
I wouldn't say everyone, definitely the momentum was with him, as he said, if anyone can handle that pressure, he's been in the same situation, 3 years ago, and that would be G. The difference between G and Stevie's year, even when Stevie had a bad race, a bad race for him, it wasn't even bad as a result, but G just had his worst races were worse than Stevie's, which made the points battle that much quicker. But before this round, crashing in Norway, only losing 12 seconds, that right then might have just been enough. Besides losing the points in Norway, that kind of took a little bit of the wind out of G's sails. He mentioned that when he was at the top of the hill about to go for his final run, that he was thinking how bummed he was about Norway. Now when you're about to drop in for your final run, when you know you just have to basically win because you have to beat the other rider, to be already having misgivings about what you did wrong earlier in the year, and G said he doesn't know why that popped in his head. It just did, and to be a bit, to be thinking about that then, it was almost as if he thought it was a given. But then at the end of the day, it was only, what was it, like, it's 2 seconds, I think, or two and something seconds that Stevie ended up beating G by. So for a year of racing to the title to be decided by, 2.8 seconds or whatever it was, that's respect to both those guys and to Hannah and Loic that even got up there above G.
Yeah, I mean, that race couldn't have gone any more exciting. I think that's the top 10 and everybody dropping in. And Loic Bruni coming down, first year senior. And I thought he was going to be our kind of spoiler. I was like, this kid's going to win it. He's going to win it. And it got even more obviously interesting with, him being in the hot seat, G coming down and not getting into the hot seat. It was like, what is going to happen? Mick had an amazing run. It seemed like it was almost a Hollywood script, like, this is what's going to happen. And you almost kind of knew being a Canadian, I thought, I was like, the right guy is going to win at the end of the day. Like, he's going to succeed. But man, there was some drama, it seemed like there was some drama along the way there. And I, for one, I thought it was one of the best races we've seen in quite a while.
Yeah. I mean, what made it exciting was guys like Loic and Blenkinsop back up there and Mick being sort of on the podium or threats for the
Iceland. Yeah, the rat boy.
Yeah. The only thing, and not to take it away from those guys, but I think what kind of fed all of their fire, Josh really should have been on the box earlier in the year, but when you have six of the other top 10 riders in the world, Aaron Gwynn, Sam Hill, Danny Hart, Cameron Cole, Greg Minnaar, Brooke McDonald, those guys were the sort of the regular podium threats or always on the podium. That's six guys not even at the race in the finals, So, it's a short season, but for six of the top 10 to be, out from injury, it just, if the race, we do need to have longer seasons, but it's amazing that even, only in a 6-week season, we lost six of the top 10 riders. So, there's definitely was some fire for all those other guys. It's like, now's their chance. If they can't get on the podium when six of the regulars are not there, then, you know, then I don't know what. So yeah, it was sad not to see all those other guys there, but it was definitely lit the fire under those young guys or the other guys that used to be on the podium.
Yeah, opportunity presented itself, and yeah, you know, they went for it. So
it seems a lot of what we've just talked about here, the momentum, what G thought about on the start line before his last run, and just there, the thought that six of the top guys weren't in, like, it, a lot of it seems to come down to, like, a mental fortitude and a mental battle within. How important do you think the mental game is, Sven, into racing? It seems incredibly important, more so than a lot of other aspects.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of how to put it in words, but you can definitely.
Your brain's not quite as sharp, eh?
No, I'm.
It is sharp.
It's super sharp. I'm just trying to think of it. You know, I've been around France and Italy and Norway, so I'm trying to think of it in English, you see, Seb.
Speaking Norwegian, have you?
I mean, at the end of the day, but you can also be mentally strong. And then, you know, your tire can just slip on a pebble that's rolled in your line. You know, stuff like that happens, and that's what keeps it, you know, so exciting. And, you know, you're practicing a downhill course. It's not like an enduro where you're kind of ready for the unexpected. It's such a different kind of mental strength, you know, this smashing out a run in single lines, but yet being, you know, able to deal with what gets thrown at you. So, yeah, you got to be mentally strong. And I think the mental strength is what, you know, allows you to hit that first turn loose and fast and confident and get 110% out of your pedaling, you know, because, you know, one can't say that Steve Smith's a better rider than G or Greg or Gwyn. But, you know, he was able to, you know, with all the pressure and going down last, you know, to still ride loose and not conservative and you know, I was asking him. Well, he said he'd known when he hit the top half as good as he knew he could. He knew he had to go a slight bit conservative on the bottom, just because, you know, he didn't think he had rode it well enough to win, but he just also didn't want to throw it away because he said there was definitely chances times when he could have thrown away at the top, so he just toned it down a tiny bit on the bottom, but. You know, didn't slow down his bottom split, but yeah, so that was that.
You're right, it could have gone anyway. I mean, right now we could be talking about how, if in a parallel universe right now, another Stevie Smith has just had the worst race of his life, and G Afton is on the World Cup overall champion, but we're not. How does it look from G's perspective now? I mean, it must have been heartbreaking for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stevie having the worst race of his life and ending up second in the world, he would have been a happy guy. Maybe not because it was so close, but if you asked him at the beginning of the year, would you be happy with second overall in the World Cup? I think for sure his answer would be yeah. Sure. But if you asked G, would you be happy for second overall in the World Cup again? His answer would definitely be no. You know, so that's where maybe Steve had less to lose, and because of the momentum, he was just keep on going 110%. Where G started off with the momentum and then maybe he was, I wouldn't say riding conservatively, but he never was, but it almost was like he was defending the number one plate where Steve was attacking number one plate and with only six rounds, you know, you're probably better off attacking than defending.
No. How is G after everything? You must have spent some time with him in the pits afterwards.
Yeah, he's super bummed. I think his biggest upsetting was, you know, getting hurt in Monsanto and not getting quali points and not being able to race as strong as he wanted to. And then, you know, he's angry with himself for just slipping out in Norway. But, you know, the tracks in Norway and the greasy conditions there, you know, that stuff's just going to happen. So, you know, I think he was frustrated at himself, thinking he threw it away in other rounds and made it harder to be motivated for this round, I guess.
He's a very tough competitor, so do you think it's going to be good for him going in fiery into the off season and next year? Is he going to have even more fire under his belly?
Yeah, I mean, because it's definitely can see that we haven't seen the end of Stevie Smith's potential. So it's not like anybody's thinking, you know, it's once again, it's just everything stacks on top of each other and everyone raised their game in training to kind of be on a level with Aaron Gwynn. And now, you know, I think everyone, one thing Stevie has, he has all the training and the discipline, but he also still has a sort of wild looseness that McDonald and Blankensop have, and he's also not afraid to, you know, he doesn't just focus on the World Cup. He's out doing filming and traveling to South America on film projects, and then running a muck in Whistler and riding, racing three or four different disciplines. So maybe the other guys, you know, how they've taken a lot of pages out of Aaron Gwynn and Manar's handbook, they'll like, you know, maybe get a little bit more loose, just, you know, I don't know. I think it can be said that, you know, you can see that Steve loves riding his bike and rides it to the limits of the bike. And I also think maybe one other thing, you know, I think Stevie, well, let me, I'm just kind of jumping topics here, but I think people will also look at having different options of equipment for next year for different tracks. You know, we've got South Africa again and Leo Gang again, and I think we're going to see a lot more guys showing up with two bikes to race. If there was timed practice, which was a disappointment that the UCI and Tissot timing couldn't get sorted this race, probably the most important time training that anyone needed at a World Cup, and they screwed it up. But Stevie was going to do a timed run on both bikes under the same conditions and then decide which one he was going to race, especially since it was pointing to drier conditions. And I think he would have ended up racing his smaller bike, and maybe he would have won by a bigger margin, or maybe he would have failed horribly. So it's going to be interesting next year. There's quite a few companies that are out there, maybe even today and this week, that are actually testing next year's bikes already.
Is that a good thing, though, that riders can come with multiple bikes to one race? Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't have bikes specific for one race, but if you can turn up to an event and have the choice of two bikes, is that a good thing or is that not? I mean, I look at Formula One and it's very strict. You have practice cars and you have spare cars, but you have a car.
For most people, I'd say it's not a good thing because you're going to waste time and choose which is better, and that is, there's just not enough time for that. But you know, at some enduro rounds, guys are racing a 5-inch bike, and the same guy then is racing a 6-inch bike. You know, if you're racing a more North American Colorado style one, or you're racing a full on Punta or the lost one. So I think, you know, it's horses for courses, and you know. Although Manar won world champs in South Africa on a full-blown downhill bike, you know, people saw the benefits that Steve Smith had when he won qualifying, and if not, you know, and there's going to be quite a few more 650B downhill bikes out there for riders to be riding and racing, and or at least having it as an option.
Seems like a great time to move on now. We've mentioned
the number of the beast. Yeah.
Well, the number of the beast is just what's happening right now. Leo Gang, there's two teams right now testing next year's bikes, and they both happen to have that size wheel, you know?
Actually, can we talk about Brendan and wheel size? God, I hate saying this, but Brendan turned up on a bit of a different bike this weekend, eh?
Well, he's raced. Funny thing is, he's won a race in Chatel last year on those size wheels. So I don't know why he wasn't sort of eager to keep experimenting earlier on in the year. Maybe on other tracks where it would have suited it. But I think he.
Why did he choose to run it this weekend? You think is it coming up just the time? Does he want to look like a young man?
Just strictly the bike park nature of the track and the middle pedal section that basically, you know, I think a bigger story for Brendan was that he ran clip pedals in a race. You know, the wheel sizes, I think, are easier to get used to than going from flats to clips if you've been around flats all your life. And I think we'll see a lot more of him on clips. And, you know, he still didn't get any result out of it or any result that he would have been super happy with. I mean, looking at Blenkinsop and Bruni, those two guys, you know, did they jump from 7th or 9th in the overall to 4th or 5th because they were on bigger wheels this weekend? Is that why they got their 4th in the, you know, their 2nd in their 6th place or 7th where Blenky got? You know, we can't attribute anything to wheel size. It comes down to the pilot at the end of the day. But, you know, those two guys definitely haven't had their style cramped or aren't hindered by the bigger wheels, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No, Blinky's as loose as ever. His style still, you know, his style still is iconic, you know, just out of control. And even though he's wearing gloves, even though he's been wearing gloves the last couple rounds, I know everybody was like, oh, he's wearing gloves now. And you're like, well, it was raining in Norway, and then it's the rules in Austria. So he'll still take them off.
the one junior, I won't mention his name in case the UCI catch him and fine him, but he's top three junior in the world. He always rides gloveless, and for this race, he has to wear gloves. So he basically cut the whole bottom of his gloves off, and he cut them into like fingerless gloves, but painted the top of his fingers with black Sharpie pen. So when he held it in his hand, the commissar could see the main glove and could see the fingers, but it just assumed it was full glove. And then meanwhile, he had no fingers, and his whole palms was a big cutout so he could feel his grip. So that was quite one of the funniest things I've seen, and to me it looked like those gloves were going to cause him more problems than help him, because they were just flapping all over the place. But
that's an old trick I remember Blenky doing in the New Zealand Nationals a bunch of years ago, when they had a commissaire turn up and throw his weight around. Blenky did the same thing, and I don't know, you got to ride with what feels right for you, eh?
Yeah, but, you know, exactly. You know,
if that means pedals or clips or gloves or no gloves, that's how it is, eh?
Yeah, we're kind of scrolling down to see, you know, who, every now and then we want to see who just because we're geeks and no real reason, but like, we don't want to try to see these days where the first guy on flat pedal finishes. And I think this year it was Conor Fearon, or this race it was Conor Fearon. He had his best result ever. He got top 10. And that guy's just one of those guys that you just watch ride a bike, you know, all day long. He's just amazing. And so that was this race's first flat pedal rider, went to Conor Fearon.
Yeah, his run was awesome to see him, because I'm not going to say I had more expectations out of him this year, but he came into the season good with that Pro GRT win down in Port Angeles, and riding, or not win, but was riding really, really well coming into the season. And then awesome to see him get that 10th, because, yeah, his style just amazing. And to only be, you know, just 6 seconds back on a bike park style course with flat pedals, just great work on his behalf.
Yeah, yeah. Another guy, Marcelo, he just missed the podium by like less than a second. So he had his year and career best result with a 6, and Steve Peat back in the top 10. I mean, these are all part of the things that, you know, that made this race, you know, so exciting. It's good seeing Peat, you know, he's turning 40 next year, and it's good seeing him actually his results improving as the season went on, which I think will give him a bunch of motivation. You know, he's racing next year downhill again, and it's good seeing that he's not slowing down.
Yeah, for him to get those last two rounds getting good results, and it's cool to see him up there still battling, and yeah, hopefully he does, you know, put in the time over the winter and continue to keep racing. And let's jump gears here. I mean, we don't want to forget about the ladies here this afternoon. They were a great race on their behalf too, and Emily Rago getting one on Atherton there, even though Atherton had pretty much sealed the deal with that championship. But some motivation for those girls going into the off season. It sounds like they're all going to be physiotherapists in the next few years.
I think Rachel's kind of feeling left out. She's the, you know, her, she's like the, I wouldn't say the only full-time professional downhiller they are in the women, but she, you know, she's really, you know, she is really, her and Manon Copp are the only ones that don't have school and don't have jobs. This is their job and this is their focus. And I think Rachel's maybe looking for a little bit else in life, and she's got, you know, good 5-6 months a year to fit in something else besides traveling and racing. So so I think she's going to look into doing some of that as a future job prospect down the line, you know. And I think, you know, to be, you know, looking 10 years down the line, people like Rago and Rachel and, you know, those are the kind of people that will be able to be good trainers and therapists to the, you know, just young sports people coming up, because they've, you know, sports are evolving and it's no longer just tennis and, you know, there's this huge, yeah, I mean, you need specialist people and coming from specialist backgrounds, it, you know, it's a natural field to go into, I reckon.
And they are, I mean, I know there's other areas of the internet that like to give to women a hard time, but they are incredible role models for any sort of athlete. I mean, looking here at Jill Kintner in fourth place. That's her best result of the year, and she is a great role model for women or men getting into the sport as well.
Yeah. It's her, I think it's her second podium, despite what some websites might...
Oh, is it?
Might...
Oh, my bad. I must have been reading Vital or something.
No. I think Pink Bike said it was her first podium, which it wasn't, but...
That's run by 13-year-olds.
No. Jill...
Slideshow, I've not seen it yet. Is it running late?
Who's Slideshow?
Oh, yeah, it's out there.
Did I miss it? Oh, okay.
You're running late, Seb. I mean, even and Caroline Buchanan that raced the four cross that was going on as well. You know, she's BMX world champion and now four cross world champion, and she came fifth in South Africa world champ. So, you know, for women like her and Jill, that's also been an, you know, an Olympic medalist. Downhilling can still be a women's sport. You know, they don't have to just go to enduro, and you know, these girls are getting it done in all types of, you know, two wheeled racing.
I suppose we should look down, and being in Canada, I have to talk about the Canadians as well. Otherwise, you know, we're going to miss quota here.
Yeah.
But I mean, looking at Miranda Miller as well, she got two first place. Oh no, sorry, that's an 11th. I misread that.
Yeah. Whoops.
Well, that was really good for her. She's back from injury, isn't she?
Yeah, good to see her back out there after that.
We like Miranda.
Miranda's a character. She's the person you need at those rounds. She's got she's always got something funny to say or something funny to tell you.
I think it's good to see her that result, because she was threatening to move into enduro, and she bolstered her downhill career a little bit more.
I think her... her massive braided ponytail that hangs in front of her when she rides would hinder her enduro career. and her hooded sweater she wears underneath her race jersey, between her hooded sweater and her ponytail. Those two things have got to be creating some drag.
Do you guys as photographers hand out like a flat sheet to riders of do's and don'ts? Don't wear your jacket. I know there was people wearing their jackets when they shouldn't have been wearing a jacket, even though it wasn't raining. And Is there like a tips thing you get out? You want to be you want to get a photo by Sven Martin? You need to follow this protocol.
Yeah, what grinds Sven Martin's gears?
Well, the thing is, there's some people. It's fine, you know. You get to choose your best photos you want to submit editorially, but some companies are paying you to be there to get photos of their riders, and you want good ones. You want a choice of photos. So when there's certain team riders that are. I asked, let's not name names, but let's say Sam Blenkinsop. I asked his team manager, how many jerseys did he get for this season? The answer was 22 jerseys.
What?
And then I asked them, why is Sam practicing in a jacket? And then Sam said he only had two jerseys with him. Something along, it was 22 or something ridiculous like that. So between getting them lost and giving them away, you know, the riders are only out there for 4 days. They can have eight jerseys. That's not asking too much. And when it's not raining and they're not going to get cold or, you know, get muddy, then why not for their sponsors and for the photographers and for the video guys? You know, the video guys are trying to splice together a video that looks like a race run. And when they're wearing a jacket and then a jacket and a jersey, it just flat out means they won't get used. And it just seems silly, know, it's, I'm sure nobody else cares about it, but if you're paid to be there all year round and people can't use your images because it's, it, you know, I love a rainy, muddy shot, then it won't bother me if the guy's in a rain jacket, but when it's sunny and there's not even mud out and you're in a rain jacket, you know, at least do like the Scott team. They have their rain jackets look exactly like their race kits. And I mean, it doesn't take rocket science to see that that works. And, you know, I don't know what is doing anything about it, really.
Do you think there should be instigated a minimum and maximum mandatory sock height? I'm referencing here.
Thankfully, that rider actually wore proper socks.
I took about Steve Smith's length of socks last weekend in Norway.
No, Peter Maresberg.
Well, Peter Maresberg.
Yeah.
And Josh Brisland's white socks with black shoes.
Yeah.
There's lots of things that there's definitely a room for another whole episode is how to get picked by a photo editor or not get picked by a photo editor. And you'll be surprised. A twat gap is a definite no-no in enduro racing, and
just to confirm for readers at home, the twat gap is the gap between your knee pad and your short. You should never be showing some thigh or chamois. It should definitely not be shown. I'm actually sat here with a twat gap right now.
Yeah, Dan Atherton lives in fear of ever, because he's got some pretty loose one industry shorts, and he says sometimes when he rides with his legs out, with his style, the pants hook the wind and then it lifts him up, so it's like a fake twat gap, because not really there, but you can see his leg. So he lives in fear of that, and he wears long tights that go under his knee pads, and then he cuts them off just above the knee pad, so that they can never, even if that happens, it can never be a twat gap showing.
That's awesome.
So that is, I think that's something that these riders have got to think about, you know.
What else grinds your gears, fashion wise?
On in photos?
Yeah.
I'm quite partial to super reflected lenses with a bit of iridium in them, because that looks pretty moto when it's sunny. And then if the ride is sponsored by Adidas, you can get some sweet reflections, as everyone that's seen Deep Summer Slideshows probably knows. That's just work for Adidas. So if anyone's out there trying to get that photo, just the Adidas goggles. What else grinds we get? Then there's Eddie Masters. You know, if you're not going to look pro, then you just got to be entertaining. And the thing with Eddie Masters, you know, there's been people kind of like him in the past, but Eddie Masters is pulling regular top 30s, and you know, he was like, would have been top 20 at this, or he was in the top 30s at this race as well before something happened to him. I forget what. I think he flattered or crashed or something.
Yeah.
But then there's guys like him and Matt Walker, the other Kiwi, that just go the opposite end of the spectrum, and they're wearing shark fins or wearing leather jackets. Eddie Masters dropped in at, I think, gonna think which race, but basically showed up in a black leather jacket, rolled out the start gate, and I think it must have been Val d'Isère. There's a bit of a straight hill.
Yeah, that was Val d'Isère.
And he just basically, because you can't have a bare chest, and the start commissar basically inspects you. And the day before, he was wearing, I think, a shark fin and a Hawaiian shirt of some sort, and the guy was like, this is unprofessional. And he was called to the commissar after practice and said, you can't ride your bike like this, unprofessional. And Eddie's like, well, I'm not professional. I'm on holiday. And he said, wait till you see my outfit for tomorrow. So then the next day, Eddie Master shows up in black leather jacket. And then I think the commissar was quite impressed because it was a jacket. And then as he rolled out the start gate, I think it was a snap button jacket. So he just ripped the full jacket, and then he just basically bombarded down the course with his jacket flapping, and so you know, there's that approach. And that definitely will he get sponsored, or should he get sponsored?
Both.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's
which one? Will he or should he?
He will get, and he should get. Yeah.
Good.
He's first and foremost, his riding definitely warrants it. And then you know, if you're not getting top tens on the podium, you've got to sort of have a following or get noticed in other ways, you know. yeah, and he's definitely a likable character for sure.
Well, that's almost, it's almost a good lead in chatting about Ed there, because we've got Wynn Masters on in very short order here to catch up with him, and I'm sure he'll have a few stories about his brother.
Oh yeah, he's, oh man, those guys have got some stories about, yeah, there's some arrests and jails in foreign countries, and car stories and toll road stories. There's all sorts of stories you're going to have to ask them, for sure. I'm scrolling through. I'm trying to see what makes some good photos. I'm just looking at some of my highlights.
What makes a good photo? I don't know. Getting it shot by Duncan, I don't know. Victor, or Sebastian. Anyone but
some. Perkin, yeah.
A good one.
How's it feel wrapping up the season? Simply put, don't ramble on too much, but how does the whole season do you feel like?
I think the racing was, again, at an all-time high. I think there's a few things the UCI let down some of the Daniel community teams and managers and riders, which they have said will not happen next year. That's all to the scheduling and practice times and all of that kind of stuff. I think some of the Red Bull live feed camera work was at an all-time high. The last two rounds showed that. I mean, we showed most of the tracks, and cable cams just added that, you know, that was really awesome. Next year there's one more round. It's a step in the right direction. Some new continents, that's a step in the right direction. Some definite rounds that maybe shouldn't be regular rounds, like South Africa and Leogang, just the tracks don't warrant them. So I think moving forward, it's definitely on the positive. You know, we got some new tracks, two new tracks next year, and we got some more rounds, and we got racing is tighter than ever, and then we got all those injured riders we spoke about earlier that will all be back battling. And then we got Rago that just beat Rachel on a good solid race. So so I think for the next year, you know, a shorter off season, so riders won't be so bored of kicking into training, and then maybe everybody will come to New Zealand and get up to race speed before South Africa and Australia. Book a House Martin tour, something like that.
And where can you find those tours? HouseMartin.com?
I think so. Or RideHouseMartin.com or Google or my Instagram or Uncle's Instagram. Some. I'm not going to make a complete spam, let people look for it. Mostly, I don't know the exact URL, but other than that.
So will you fly back to New Zealand in just a matter of weeks after Transfer Bonds?
No, I stay for finale and Euro World Series final, and then New Zealand right after that.
And what's the best thing you're looking forward to in the off season? What is Sven's number one thing you are looking to have happen or looking to do?
Surgery.
Hopefully, not get my surgery. I should take out some kind of insurance for loss of earnings for work, and then I could have my whole summer and then actually get my surgery just before the work season starts. So still get paid but not do any work. That would be ideal. But since that's never going to happen, hopefully go in healthy and come out healthy and ride my bike more than I did last winter with a broken arm. And just get back to New Zealand and just get in the mountains, really. Been watching other people too long and staying in single places for too long at a time. So, yeah, just go riding.
Well, it's a busy lifestyle you lead. And again, you know, I definitely want to thank you for myself here at the Off Track Show. Thank you for taking the time every time that we try and connect with you to join us here and give us some insight. I think your stories are awesome. And especially what grinds your gears today is, I think our listeners will appreciate all these stories. So
I think we should just make it regular. Just each week we'll do a grind you. What grinds Sven's gears, Colin? We can just wind you up and set you off.
You can do that. You can do that every day, Seb.
Too easy.
Starting with how does Seb Kemp grind me? That's a start.
Can't grind my gears anymore. I'm a
mellow man. I think we need to almost have like a debate of a Seb versus Sven. who can wind up the person each other better?
Yeah. Seb, are you coming to
wind me up?
are you coming? Is anyone coming to finale?
I don't know. Let's see.
I don't know. I've been looking at numbers in a bank account, but who knows? Maybe we can make something happen.
It's a networking opportunity. It's like the Eurobike Interbike of enduro. It's where all the business deals are done.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we'll have to have a conversation outside of the podcast here. Maybe we'll. I'm getting fat already. I haven't really done much the last few weeks.
It's all downhill, as they say.
Well, yeah, again, thanks, Sven, very much for taking the time here. We'll let you go. Hopefully you feel better, and best of luck in the Trans-Provence this weekend. We'll be cheering from at home here, and hopefully everything goes to plan for you there, and we'll be catching up with you at the next off-track show, which will be a final Enduro World Series.
Yeah, maybe we can... we'll see how Trans-Provence works out, but maybe we can do something there.
Yeah. If you want to, we can. Well, I'll touch base with you next week once it's all done, and we'll go from there. So, we'll let you go here. We're gonna go straight into our next guest. We'll go into the Kiwi rider, Win Masters, and catch up with him. So, thanks for taking the time, and we'll talk to you in short order.
All right, man. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, man.
Cheers, dude. See you later.
Bye.
Always great having Sven here on the Off Track Show, presented by BikeMag.com. And without further ado, we're going to go straight into our next guest right now. All right, and joining us right now on the Off-Track Show, all the way from Leogang, Austria, we're just wrapping up. It's the day after the final of the World Cup downhill. We've got Win Masters from the Bulls team all the way over there. Win, how are you doing this evening?
Yeah, pretty good. Got a bit of a hangover, but it was good. Party last night, and she's just coming right now.
does that make what a good World Cup round is? It could be a good course, but if there's a crappy after party, does that kind of diminish the quality of the event? You know, do you have to have both those things go right for it to be a successful event?
Depending on the I think it kind of depended on who won too. When Stevie won, everyone wanted to celebrate. So everyone was going pretty hard last night, and the party like wouldn't be good if it was anywhere else, but just because of the moment kind of made it sort of thing.
Yeah, that was a truly special moment there yesterday that Stevie pulled out the win, and I think it's cool to see. I think with all you young guys that are racing, you guys are all such good friends. There's such good camaraderie between you guys. I mean, why not celebrate such a cool thing? But congrats to Stevie for winning that. But I mean, the biggest thing, congrats to you, man. It sounds like a weird thing to say, an accomplishment, but you made it through the season injury free, which has been a hard thing for the last few years, right?
Yeah. The last 2 years have been really hard, so I was just stoked to like pretty much have a consistent year and no injuries and just get through the whole season. Yeah. I got out at Whistler, but that was kind of the only injury this year.
Yeah, that pump track jumped up and grabbed you there. But I mean, it was, it sounds like a weird thing. I don't want to, it's not to bring you down, but it was awesome to see you get through the whole season injury free, because you're such a good guy. You've been racing it so long. And on our last show, we had Bryn Atkinson on, and he's kind of going through the same thing that you were going through, where you'd heal up from an injury and then it would, you'd get bitten again and get injured again. I mean, maybe take us through and give us a bit of insight the last couple of years. I mean, how as a rider, how are you staying motivated to keep following the dream when every time you were getting back on the bike, unfortunately, something was going wrong?
Pretty much. It started like I got like a compound fracture with both bones in my arm. And that was like 2011. And then they fixed that and got a little bit infected and then didn't heal properly. And then I was back racing, they thought it was healed, but it wasn't really. And then I ended up bending the metal plates in my arm at the Fort William World Cup. And then from there, it was they had to redo it all. So that was 2011 gone. And then just before the 2012 season, I got my handlebar snapped and I broke my scaphoid. And then that didn't heal for pretty much four months or something. And then I had to go for surgery on that. And that was quite a complicated surgery because the bone started dying. So they had to cut bone out of my arm and join it in with an artery attached. So,
holy smokes, dude. That's gnarly.
Yeah, just a fair bit of time injured with the last 2 years. But I was pretty much just stoked to get back on the bike every time, and it was kind of like pretty disappointing when the handlebar snapped. That injury was pretty frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the biggest thing, right? Is you're every time you're, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you're the type of person, you're going to ride bikes regardless of a race environment or not, you know, like that's what's in you. But every time you're getting back on, it's, you're getting, you know, getting bitten and hitting the ground, which is, frustrating. So it was really cool to see you, rebuilding this year. And you know, we saw some amazing, I think some good results in terms of a building year for you, right? Like I'm guessing every time you're in the start gate, it was, you're racing to do as best you can, but really you wanted to, was it a huge goal just to make it through the season? And was there any specific like points where you're like, I want to get this result at this race or anything?
Pretty much just trying to get in the top 20 was like what I was trying to do this year and just be consistent and have fun. Like, I didn't really want to put too much pressure on myself and just try and get back to where I was before. And then I've already pretty much done better than I expected, but just had a couple, little bit of bad luck with flat tires in the World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at your results here. I mean, you know, Mount St. Anne 37th and then, you know, Norway DNF and then 21st, in Leogang. But I think the biggest thing is showing here that you do have, we always know you've had the skill, but even just the riding ability. I mean, Worlds, you got 17th, which you know, not your you know, typical downhill track. Very cardio based, very lots of pedaling. I mean, that was I think a great result for you, and it's showing just how well you're doing in terms of getting back to full health. And then you've had some good qualifying results this year.
Yeah, I put in a fair bit more work for the season because I had so much time where I was injured, like at the end of last year, so I couldn't ride my mountain bike really. So I was more like in the road bike and at the gym and that, and coming to the season real fit. So that kind of helped quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean it's great to see that, and I mean, you've got one more race. You're saying you've got the IXS Cup finals for next weekend. So technically, it's, you know, the off season of the World Cup for the UCI. What are your plans in the off season in terms of training and everything along those lines?
Pretty much, after next week, I'll head home, and then I've got working on a house that I've got at home, and then I've got 2.5 weeks to try and get that done, so I'll be like busy doing that for 2.5 weeks, and then I'm going to Asia for 3 races, just more for fun. I've got like the Asia Pacific Downhill Challenge in Indonesia, and then Chiang Mai Downhill Challenge in Thailand, and then a Malaysian race as well. So it's going to be pretty cool. That's more just for a cool trip, though.
Well, that's awesome to hear. I know those races seem to be gaining a little bit of popularity. I know Troy Brosnan was at one of those last year and everything. Is it just a fun trip, or is there good money if you win the race, or is there a contingency where, you know, you're getting an appearance fee to you know, go bolster up an event like that?
It's pretty much for a good trip. Like the last 2 years I've been to Thailand anyway, so it's kind of cool to do the trip anyway, but they help out with the flights and stuff, so that's pretty cool. And then at the Indonesia race, there's $5,000 US for the win, so.
Oh, that's and then good money.
Fifth, so it's really good.
Yeah, that's really good money. I was curious because, yeah, with seeing those races kind of starting to grow and all these other events, it's in, you know, cool to see. It seems like a small event from a North American's perspective, because I guess we're so far on the other side of the pond here. But, you know, going to those races for you from home, from New Zealand, I mean, how long of a flight is that to get up to those races?
It's still pretty much halfway around the world, so it's like 12, 13-hour flight.
Yeah.
But it's not too bad, really. So, especially when you're used to flying to Europe and that, it's not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I mean, what's your take on the series this year? 6 rounds seems a little bit short. I know everybody wants more rounds, but then, of course, then the costs and everything go up, and it makes it almost harder to do those races. What was your take on the overall series? Is it really the World Cup? Is it all it can be, or should there be a lot more getting done for you guys as riders?
I think they could definitely add in a few more races. Like, six races isn't very much. Like, if you only did the World Cup, well, then you've got hardly any races the whole year, really. So it'd be cool to see a few more races, and I'm sure they could fit someone even just in Europe, like, to make the schedule a bit bigger. But it depends. Like, a lot of the teams wouldn't be able to afford to go to other places to make it more of a World Cup series.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that, you know, you did the privateer thing for a bit, and now you know, I wanted to touch on your current team with your sweet team manager, the Mad Dog there. Maybe you know, being in North America here, I don't really know a ton about what the team is that you're on. Like, I know it's on the Bulls bike. Maybe for our listeners at home there, you can kind of bring us all up to speed in terms of, like, what the team's all about, the bike you're riding, and just everything that goes along with it.
Yeah, the team just set up this year, and they're, like, run by Mountain Bike Rider magazine, which is a big German magazine, and then they collaborated with Bulls, and they're, like, a mainstream German bike company, and they just got into gravity stuff this year. So we've been working on the Wildcore downhill bike, which is what I'm riding at the moment, and pretty much just developing that this year to be ready for production next year.
And how did you get involved with a German based team and brand?
I just pretty much started with talking to Boris for a little bit, and then things worked out from there. Like, and it just came about from there.
And what's it like having him as a team manager? Is it I mean, you're guaranteed to get some sick pictures, but he seems like he's maybe a could steer you down the wrong path if you're not careful at times. He's quite the character. We had him on one of the shows earlier this year, and infectious attitude in terms of just how stoked he is to be at every race and just to watch those moments go down.
Yeah, he's not actually like the proper team manager, but he's more the team photographer, but then he has quite a say in the team. Like, he helped the team come about, so he's still got some good involvement, but he's definitely a hell race fan when we get to the race. As soon as the van pulls up, he's straight out running around taking photos everywhere.
Yeah, he's cool. It's cool to see him, you know, when we had him in Whistler this year, he hadn't been here before, just to see how blown away he was by what happens during crankworks and everything. So it was it's cool to see that, and it's cool to see, you know, guys like yourself making the trip over here. And I guess, you know, we know your brother was in town. He was in town for like a good 3 or 4 weeks riding all the time. So, I mean, for you, what is it about crankworks and Whistler that makes you guys want to come here every year to come race and hang out?
It's kind of like a little bit of a break, and a lot of my friends go there, so it's good to get a lot of riding in with your mates and pretty much have a good time in between the World Cups.
Yeah, it's cool to see everybody come over here and hang out and shred, and you're talking to all your friends coming here. I know, you know, some of the other guys, we're talking to Connor Fearon earlier this year, same thing. He's like, you know, for him it's like almost the best part of the year because he's got all his buddies that are back home and they're doing other races, not all the World Cups, and then they get to all unite in Whistler and hang out and catch up for a kind of 2 or 3 week mini vacation in between World Cups.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that, but got to be careful you don't end up out on the town too much though, especially when there's World Cups coming up later.
Yeah, that's Crankworks is always fun. Like you said, if you've got a World Cup coming up close afterwards and you end up, yeah, with the wrong person's credit card on the bar, you're could put you back a few pegs.
Yeah, for sure. And probably affect, there's a few riders that would have been caught in that trap a few times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're saying all your buddies here and everything like that. You're coming from New Zealand. I think you guys probably have one of the most unique riding scenes out there. And in terms of like the caliber of riders that are getting, you know, produced, that you guys are from there and you guys are all good friends. I mean, what's it like to have grown up there and watch the riding community develop and flourish?
yeah, it was pretty much like couldn't ask for a better place to grow up riding downhill. But the only problem with New Zealand is so far away from Europe, so to make any to get anywhere with downhill, you have to really make a big commitment to make it over there. But we've just got so much good riding in New Zealand that we don't really need anything else. Like, everything's there for us.
Yeah, I mean, and what's it like? You mean you ride with you and Blinky are good friends, and same with the Bulldog. What's it like? I mean, you guys push each other on such a regular basis. Does that benefit you going into the World Cup rounds? Just you know where the top guys are at in the scheme of things because you get to ride with them and hang out with them.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, done a fair bit of training this off season with Sam, and that helped quite a lot. Like, just seeing where he's at and what he's doing, and then learning off him kind of, and then pushing him on the road ride, or he's pushing me, whatever. It's kind of quite good like that. And then riding downhill with Brooke or Sam, like, pretty much full speed the whole time.
Yeah, it was a shame we didn't get to see Bulldog finish out the whole year there, because he plows down those tracks, which I can only assume makes it just a good thing for you to ride with somebody that's always that committed that fast, no matter what the conditions are. So
yeah, it pretty much drags your speed up pretty quick.
either you keep up or you're going to get left behind and be riding by yourself. So
it's hard to keep up sometimes with him.
Well, yeah, hopefully that shoulder's getting all fixed up for him here in the off season, and he can get back on it. And then, so with it being off season now, is there anything, you know, everybody loves in the springtime, everybody loves to talk about it, like, oh, I've got this new trainer, I'm doing this and doing that. What, going into the off season, are you just going to kind of continue the usual plan that you are, ride bikes as much as you can, have fun? Or now that you've got like a solid year of being healthy under your belt, what are you going to do different for next year's World Cup?
Pretty much just try and build on what I've already got from this year, and then I'm not sure if I'll get a trainer or not. It just depends on how much money I've got and how much I can afford to put into that, because already what I'm doing is kind of working anyway, so I've kind of got most of it figured out. So just try and get a bit fitter ready for next season and come into South Africa real strong.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be the first round there. That'll be get on the pedals and get cranking. And is that I guess a huge thing now is just how much training you do. You know, natural ability is only going to take you so far, as we've seen. You know, is it how many hours a week do you need to spend on a road bike to be competitive with these top guys to try and get up in that top 10?
It depends. Like, at the early part of the training, probably try and do quite a lot of hours on the road bike. But as it gets closer to the season, it just gets a bit shorter. And then just try and work on building the sprint fitness a bit better. So it's not like a crazy amount, because it's still only downhill, I think. Like, if you compared us to road cyclists, I don't think it's actually that much.
Yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, I guess, are you getting excited that there is a round? It's obviously not in New Zealand, but there's a round in Australia next year, a little closer to home, and probably pretty, it's kind of a legendary track from back in the day in Cairns. Like, is that something that's exciting for you, like with some more rounds next year in different locations?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to like a new location, but I lived in Cairns for 2 years before I started racing World Cup, so it's pretty cool to get back there, and I know kind of how the tracks work around there, so it should be pretty good.
Oh, right on. That's cool to hear. It seems like, yeah, so many people are from up in that zone. We were chatting to we had Bryn on last week, and he was telling us how his brother Reese is building the track and how he's raced there back in the day and knows Glenn Jacobs, and it's seems like that could be a, you know, already just chatting to everybody about it, a very exciting round for next year, just because it's, you know, so many people down from that southern hemisphere that have ridden there, and the fact that, yeah, you know the terrain, which could play, you know, it's short of having a race in New Zealand, it's almost a home race for you, right?
Yeah, pretty much feels like a home race, because after living there 2 years, and then the track, I think, will be really good. Like, anything Glenn Jacobs is involved with is pretty amazing. Like, he does a really good job, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's gonna be a very exciting one. And for next year, like, are you re-signed? Like, do you have a 2-year deal with the your current team right now, or are you on the market shopping for some more support for next season?
At the moment, I haven't signed another contract yet, but we're just talking at the moment and should have it worked out pretty soon. So that'll be good.
Oh, right on. That's good to hear. I mean, it seems is it interesting to be, you know, you're their kind of lead rider on the team and to be developing a bike at the same time? Is that does that make it harder where you're focusing on racing, but also at the same time you need to try and you know, you're on a new bike that's got different suspension and getting everything set up? Like, is that was that harder this year for you, or was it kind of a cool challenge and process?
It's like interesting, but it can be really challenging because sometimes things don't work out with each frame we're getting because we're getting it straight from Taiwan, and it can be hard to work through. But then when it works out and everything's what you want, it's pretty awesome. So it's quite good like that. But then it can affect your racing a little bit, possibly.
Yeah, and are you getting to choose exactly, like, are you racing exactly what you're asking for, or is it you're giving them feedback, they're taking a few points from that and then sending you kind of what they think is going to be the best production bike with some of your tweaks on it?
Yeah, it's like we're still working through it, still a few more things I want to change to the next one, but it just takes time, like getting each frame and then riding it and then working out any issues that I've got with it and then giving them feedback, and then they work through the feedback and decide how much they want to do. So it's quite good though.
Oh, right on. I mean, it seems like it's a good bike and it was working for you. I mean, to get that result in Worlds where everybody was, you know, seems like a lot of the guys were, you know, Graves, he's running a trail bike, and other guys are running, you know, 32-pound extra large carbon bikes. It's cool to see a strong result, and you know, in terms of looking at the time, you know you're not too far back from those top guys when they're running some pretty crazy technology, when you're just riding the same bike that you ride at each and every round, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Like the bike actually works really well, so I'm really stoked with it. Like it's got a high pivot, so it's really good on the rough track. So that's what it's mainly suited to, I think, and it's quite slack. So,
oh, nice.
Rough, fast trick.
Nice. And then one thing I wanted to touch on, it's, you know, not to jump around, but your brother, he's quite the character. He was racing a lot of rounds this year, and it's got to be cool to have him kind of doing the privateer thing where he's getting to see him in each and every round. And he seems to love dressing, and probably the most interesting things, my favorite definitely being the shark fin on the helmet at Mount St. Anne for Shark Week. I thought that was classic. what's it like to be able to, you know, share these the experience with your brother where he's at these rounds and you guys get to see each other on a regular basis?
Yeah, it's quite good having him at the races. We've done the practice together a fair bit this year and walked the track together at a few of the races, and he's actually pretty good with some lines and stuff. So, and then just have to try and beat him every race though. Can't let him beat me.
Can't. Yeah, he's. I mean, I guess what his best race was Val de Sol. He had a pretty strong showing there. But yeah, I think his outfits and the UCI commissaire is telling him, you know, think you should be dressing professional, and him just going, well, I'm not professional, I'm just here having a good time, is I think it's a bit of a breath of fresh air within it, where everybody's so serious at times. So
yeah, it's pretty cool that he's just wearing what he wants and doing it how he wants, because that's how it should be anyway. Like we ride bikes for fun, really, not just for like to be professional or whatever. You don't need to have the latest pajamas to go fast down the hill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And are we going to see him doing all the rounds next year, do you know? Or I know there's rumors floating around that he might be on a team for next year, or is he just going to cruise along to the beat of his own drum?
Yeah, at the moment he's just trying to work on whatever he can get for next year and and he actually yesterday he just sold his bike so he can go home pretty much. So
it's sold the old Zerode to make it back to the home turf.
Yeah, someone rolled through the pits yesterday and looked at his bike, and then they ended up buying it. So he's pretty happy about that. And now he's back home and straight back to work. He's got to pay my parents some money. So hopefully he can find something for next year, and then he'll do the full circuit for sure, I think.
Yeah, and you saying parents, I mean, how important is that to become a professional mountain biker nowadays? I mean, is it something you can do without parent support, you know, especially at the start? Or is, everybody says thanks to my parents, but I think, just how important were they in your career to get you where you're at right now?
Pretty much would be pretty hard to do it without them, like, but my parents are pretty realistic about things, and they try and make us work for everything. So I had to like move to Australia and work in the mines to be able to get enough money to do it at the start. So for me, I pretty much worked for it myself anyway. So, but then when I was younger, they definitely had to pay for bikes and stuff. There's no way I could afford to do this sport like without their help. So I wouldn't have got to where I was without them.
Yeah, it's cool to see. It sounds like they're not the parents that are just going to give you a handout and swipe their card and you can go race on their dime, where we see a lot of the young kids nowadays, they don't know what the hard work is. And especially if you had to go work in the mines for a couple of years just to try and, you know what you wanted to do. You had a dream, go work hard for a couple of years to make ends meet so you can go travel the world.
Yeah, it's way better to be a bit, for them being like that, and then it made us better later on anyway. So, like, we know the value of money rather than just getting given the latest carbon downhill bike and the latest gear and then a free ticket around the world. You don't get any of that, so it's good.
Yeah, awesome to hear, man. That's I think just seeing how your riding is and how professional you are, I think that speaks huge to the upbringing that your parents did for you. So it's, at the end of the day, you guys got to thank mom and dad, because I'm the same way. Yeah. It's like I never would have ended up in Whistler and racing for a little bit and all these other things had my parents not taught me the goals of money and what hard work is at a young age. Otherwise, it's just we'd be floating by asking for handouts. So,
yeah, no, it's good for sure. But definitely respect that.
Yeah, exactly. Craziest story of the year. Anything you want to share? What was like the one moment of this World Cup, or one kind of particular instance that you just think that you want to share with all of our listeners for the Off Track Show?
Got to think of one at the moment. It hasn't been that crazy. It's just been full on racing. Like I've raced, last weekend was my 17th race for the international season. So it's been pretty busy.
Yeah. That's a very full on year to be doing 17 races. That's
yeah. Whew. And then I got, probably 10 races before I came over at home in New Zealand. So it adds up, and then a couple in Asia, I'll get up to about 35 or something.
Holy smokes! That's an interesting point where someone like yourself, you're racing as much as you can to A, get experience, and to try and go get purse money. Where then there's other guys that are racing as little as possible. They do the World Cup series, and that's it. They do their six rounds, a couple one off events, and the end of the year they haven't even probably raced 10 times. Interesting. Yeah. To see how hard you have to work when you want to make it to that next level, and how other people just are they do the bare minimum at times.
Well, sometimes it's probably better to do that than you can fit in proper training during the week. Like, it's hard to train week to week when you're racing week to week, so that can be tricky at times.
Yeah, and are you, with your traveling, are you just got your downhill bike, or how many bikes do you usually have with you? Do you have a trail bike with you, or you got your hardtail, or?
Yeah, normally downhill bike and trail bike, so that can do a bit of cross country or whatever, or road ride wherever you are. So definitely try and take the trail bike everywhere.
Nice. Are we going to see it any enduro rounds next year? We saw Blinky mixing it up. Are we going to maybe see if timing works next year when you're in Europe? Come battle it out with the battle it out with the enduro guys.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to. I've done like a couple of enduros in New Zealand and quite enjoy that racing. So if it fits in, and then the Bulls want to work on a new enduro bike, so that'll be should have a prototype next year, and then hopefully get to race that somewhere.
Yeah, no, it's it'd be cool. I think that was one of the coolest things to see is see the downhillers come mix it up with the enduro specific guys, especially guys that have done it for ages like Jerome and them, those guys, and to see the other Kiwi Blinky come mix it up with them and everybody else. It's cool to see who's the best kind of all around mountain biker out there, and how certain tracks cater where you can come straight from a downhill bike and hop on the little bike and mix it up on the podium. It's always cool to see that. So hopefully we can see out there next year.
Yeah, it'd be cool for sure. Like, I do probably more riding on the enduro bike than on the downhill bike, so definitely be keen for that.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, any parting thoughts here? We'll let you off here and let you go back to hanging out and enjoying your evening here after a good party last night.
Yeah, just chilling out, and pretty much just thanks to the Bulls for the year. That's pretty much all I've got.
Cool, man. Well, again, yeah, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to come on the off-track show here presented by Bike Mag. Again, we as soon as I hit you up, you got back to us right away, and we'll have to have you in studio next year when you're in town for Crankworks and catch up on some stories with you.
Yeah, I'll have to have a few more crazy stories for you then.
Yeah. We'll have to, I'm sure there'll be some made up, and who knows, maybe we'll try and touch base with you in the middle of winter there, where we're still, just like you're still trying to figure out your next year here at the Off Track Show, we're still trying to figure out exactly what direction we want to go, if we want to do some winter updates with riders or not. So for all of our listeners at home who are listening to this, if anybody wants to know what's up and check in with certain riders, maybe we'll do some special one-off edition podcasts. We'll have to, maybe we'll get you and the bunch of the other Kiwi boys together. We'll have you and Blinky on one of a winter show of some sort.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be rad to do. So, again, yeah, thanks, Wynn, for taking the time to join us here today. Again, congrats on a successful season in terms of, some great results and staying healthy. I think a really good building year for you to come into next season. And really excited to see what you can do after a full season a full off season of training.
Yeah, thanks very much, and thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no worries, man. We'll have to catch you next time. So again, thanks, and talk to you later.
Cheers. Catch you later.
And there you go, folks. What a season! 6 rounds, 4 months worth of racing. Probably not long enough. Some interesting characters along the way. Some great interviews that we've had here on the Off Track Show. Of course, thanks to all of our guests this season. Doing the downhill portion, again, the end of the UCI World Cup. Now it's time for a bit of an off-season, time for a little R&R for our riders, and for them to go back to the drawing board, get fired up for next year. Of course, big thanks to our show guests today. Of course, Sven Martin and Wynn Masters, and of course, Seb Kemp. We're getting them back in there. We had laid them off temporarily, but we decided to get them back in. We figured having Sven on would be a good way to get him riled up and get some good information out of him. So for all of you guys at home, thanks very much for tuning in. Of course, joining us here on this journey, this podcast that we like to have here. And of course, big thanks, as I said earlier, to BikeMag.com. They're our main sponsor, our only sponsor. They've been the ones that have been making sure this is getting produced and getting it in your guys' ears every time we have a round. So a bit of a layoff period right now. We'll be coming back at you guys. Of course, later on this fall, we'll be coming at you from the final Enduro World Series in Italy. That'll be happening in a little later on. So again, stay up to date with everything on our Twitter account, off_trackMTB. We'll be telling you who our guests are. We're trying to line something up for that final show. Again, stay up to date with the Instagram account there. Once Sven has a working phone, he will be back up on the grid putting out pictures. And, of course, stay up to date with everything on BikeMag.com. And if you've missed any of our episodes, our shows here, iTunes, they're free. Download them. It's not a waste of time. And the more support we get, the more we can come back bigger and better for next season. So, again, it's not the end. We still have another podcast to do, another race to wrap up, the Enduro World Series finale. And for all of us here, my name's Tristan Merrick. Thanks for joining us on today's little adventure. And keep the rubber side down and make sure you're out on the trails.